Hello and welcome to episode 51, season 2, episode 6, to be exact, of the D-Hoop University podcast. This is your host, Daryl Harris, also known as D-Hoopster. And we're back at it, folks. Told you phase 2 of the NBA season is here. Things are starting to get real, which means it's time to talk about our squads. The Lake Show, to be exact. In order to do that, brought in my guy, Omiz. Hot Boy OJ, Fox Sports O, whatever you want to call him, as well as our collegiate expert, because it is March. Lest we forget, it is March. So we got Chuck on here as well. One of the dope things I have in this pod is getting to blend worlds of mine. And these are two of my best friends from completely different walks of life, essentially. So pod was fun to do. Plenty to get into. What's crazy and what has to be stated before we get into the listen is that this was recorded during the Dallas and Denver game Sunday afternoon. It ended in dramatic fashion. So as we did this discussion on the pod, we talked specifically about Kyrie being on a heater right now. We talked about Luka's future with the Mavericks, how these teams stack up in the postseason. The game's happening in real time. I see it's going down to the wire. I put these two guys in a group chat. I'm like, uh-oh. Right as it looked like Dallas was about to choke. They were up 88-98 with a couple minutes left, and it was 102-102 with 30 seconds left. Jamal Murray hits a three, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. The guys are folding. We were just talking about this. Luka answers, top of the key three. Denver misses. Dallas gets the ball back with about 3 seconds left. In the troop chat, I'm like, I would give this shot to Kyrie. I would. Screenshots to prove it. Sure enough, the ball comes into Kyrie. He only drops in one of the most beautiful, artistic, skillful, assassin-like game winners that we've probably ever seen. A left-handed skyhook over the reigning, or not the reigning finals MVP, arguably the best player in the game, damn near 7-footer, bottom at the buzzer. Remarkable stuff. Remarkable stuff. So that's just an aside that needs to be mentioned hand in hand with what we recorded. So without further ado, folks, Big Jace, bring the beat in. It's time to talk some hoops. What's up, fellas? How we doing?
Man, doing great, brother. How are you?
Solid, man. Solid. Chuck.
All good, man. Thank you for having me. Love seeing Sebastian in the background having the time of his life.
Literally cheesing at the camp. And you can't even hear us. But nah, man, these are two of my day ones, man. Oh, we go back from the very beginning. Chuck was the first homie I made in Texas. And if anything, I'm loyal. Now, we got two Western Conference teams to discuss today. Hold on, back. We got two of our personal, you know, ride or die squads that we got to get to. And I've been putting off Lakers all season until I can get somebody else to come on here and vent with me. Because for one, up until the All-Star break, trade deadline, I'm like, spare the, you know, blowing it up or, you know, all the chalkboard conversations until we at least know who's on the roster for the playoffs. That kind of applies across the board. But we're past that point now. We are in play-in contention. You know, we're crunching numbers, seeing who's going to be in, who's going to be out, trying to lock up seeding. You know, folks are playing through injuries now and the whole nine. So it's a bit more real. And as of today, I'm going to pull these standings up. I already know our Lakers, though. I already know we're playing contenders. I already know.
Yeah, man. We're playing champions is what it looks like.
That's like our spot.
Yeah, it's like Badly. Our spot. You have a successful season, you know, but don't got to go all the way to the NBA Finals. Seems like it's made just for the Lakers.
Y'all should get home court in the play-in for winning the in-season tournament.
It's not a bad caveat. I mean, we got to get something. Right?
And Chuck, your Mavericks, man. Your Mavericks, they're not too far from looking at us in the play-in. But I'm pretty sure they'll make the postseason, no less.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, we'll play extra games. I just don't know if it's going to be one or if it's going to be two or if it's going to be 16. So it's interesting because we could, you know, bottom out the rest of the season and be at the wrong end of the play-in, or we could really go on a run. And I think if everything's clicking and humming, we're not a team that anybody really wants to see in a 7-game series.
Mm.
What's interesting is that that could change over the course of the recording, because right now Mavs are in 8, 9 games back out of the 1 seed. Lakers are 10th, 11.5 games back. That's pretty much the cutoff. The Rockets, Jazz, Grizzlies, they're all, I won't mention the Grizzlies. Rockets and Jazz are over 4 games behind the Lakers. But the Mavs, you're only a game slash a half game behind the Suns and the Kings. Suns are about to lose right now. So, like, you guys could secure that 6 with a good break. It takes some big finesse for the Lakers to do that, but things could change as we're recording. But where do you guys want to go first, man? You want to start in L.A.?
Could start in L.A., but Dallas is actually pretty interesting. You were talking about how you think it's the cutoff. I see the Pelicans at 5, and I'm looking at their upcoming schedule, and they'll be coming back down to earth. They have the Bucks. They have the Celtics. They have the Suns, which is essentially a 2-gamer because they're so close in the standings. And they also have the Kings, the Lakers, and the Warriors. Now, I know the Pelicans is probably a younger team than some of those other teams, but I do see a team like the Pelicans when it's actually crunch time and it actually gets close to get going. I see a team like the Mavericks actually having the advantage because they have better one-on-one players, better veterans. So I can see them honestly escaping the play-in in favor of the Pelicans. I can see the Pelicans kind of bottoming out. I know that's probably something that's not really popular to say, but I think we've seen this before with the Pelicans. They kind of choke at the end. I remember a couple years ago when they played the Lakers to get to the play-in, they were losing games down the stretch when they had a chokehold on the play-in. So just keep your eye on the Pelicans as far as a team that I think that might come back down to earth when we were talking about how this Western Conference is going to end up shaking up.
Phoenix could easily drop a couple as well, you know.
Sure. Well, Go ahead.
New Orleans is an interesting piece you brought up because they remind me a little bit of Sacramento last year, where they're exceeding expectations a bit and they've got a lot of really young, exciting pieces, but there may be still one pivotal piece away. Like for me in Sacramento, it's probably a dynamic wing scorer. Okay. And it's like, okay, you've got Harrison Barnes, but at the end of the day, he's not going to get you over the hump in all likelihood. And for me with the Pelicans, I mean, they're missing somebody that can really make a difference on the block and around the rim. And so, you know, they have Valanciunas and he's good. He's serviceable. He's a good rebounder. But I think it's a similar situation where he's not going to get you over that hump necessarily. So I think, like you said, they're an interesting team to kind of key in on. And the hard thing about it is when these teams are competitive, those become really hard pieces to add without giving up a lot of what you already have.
Right.
Yeah, 30 seconds on New Orleans. They're a little scary to me. I'm mad that I didn't get Trey Murphy back on the squad for fantasy purposes down the stretch because he's warming up. He's found his legs again. They're regressing Valanciunas' minutes. He's actually only played about 20 minutes or so the last week or two.
Yeah.
So they're seeing something with small ball Zion and riding with that. I think they're in that building, that Smoothie King Center, gets pretty turnt for some reason. So, like, they are a little – They're a little frightening. It's funny that we came and said Lakers, Mavs, which we're going to talk about. We ended up on the Pelicans. But the West is like that. I think it's honestly up for grabs. Probably Nuggets versus the field. Take your pick. But anything can happen. You know, we're always a rolled ankle away from anybody ending up in the conference finals. So it's worthwhile discussion. Chuck, I don't know if you ever got to hear, but Shiv, myself, and Terrell spent a good deal of time talking about the Mavericks on episode 50, and we were very bullish. We were digging the trade deadline acquisitions, like getting Gafford in there, like getting PJ Washington in there. I think since then we've seen some of the, okay, it's, you know, things don't work immediately. You got to iron some things out. It hasn't been the smoothest road for PJ yet statistically. But what I was banging was that, yo, Kyrie right now, he's got a fire shoe on the market. He's got a headband or an elbow band. He's got something with the finger sleeve. Like, that version of Kyrie, you never want smoke with. And Luka took a couple games off, and you've seen him right now. He's putting up insane numbers, and he's coming back. So they've got to find their balance. But I think they have over the course of this year, more so than they did in their, you know, stint together last season.
So, yeah, I agree. A couple of things. Like, you're definitely right about the longevity, just Kyrie and Luka playing better together. I mean, I would push back on the trades and the immediate impact part of it, because Gafford, from the first game, fit like a glove, right? I mean, this is like a big, athletic, high-energy guy that wants to rebound the ball and Luka can throw lobs to. And so when you have him and Lively, all of a sudden you're giving Luka 48 minutes of more than serviceable lob threats and decent rim protection. And I think that's been the biggest difference for the team. You know, still waiting to see exactly where and how PJ Washington will fit in. And then, yeah, you're right. Kyrie is in Dallas, been able to express himself with no animosity, repercussions, hangups, conflict, whatever you want to call it. He's really just been able to do him and play basketball. And it's worked well for everybody, apparently.
How do you feel postseason-wise? Because, like, I'm on the same page with you. Luka has proven himself and shown glimpses of, like, yo, postseason best player on the court, he can have that, like, he can grab that belt, essentially, in any series. I get worried when I see him with all the KT tape wrapped up on him and, like, limping and, like, playing this Ole defense, because I'm like, okay, that's going to come back to bite you.
So with the defense part of it, yeah, I mean, look, I think Luka is actually a good defender when he's bought in. When he's guarding the ball, when he wants to be a good defender, he's a good defender. I don't care about how hard he plays on defense during the regular season. I do expect that effort to be there, possession in, possession out in the postseason. But, you know, the continuity is better in terms of postseason. I'd say I'm optimistic. Kind of cautiously optimistic. I don't think anybody wants to play the Mavericks if chemistry is clicking and if everybody's healthy. But at the same time, I've seen us, you know, blow 20-point leads. I've seen us get down 20 early and not be able to claw back. So there are definitely still kinks for us to work out. We're not a well-oiled machine by any means yet.
If it doesn't go well, how will you feel going into the summer?
I think it depends on what moves we make, right? I mean, you know, we've got guys on the team right now where you look at a guy like Derrick Jones Jr., and he's had a long career in the NBA, right? But a lot of it's been
– Running Rebel, shout out.
Yep. And a lot of it's been for his, you know, athletics, his accolades as a dunker. He's been a solid player but hasn't really been able to crack a lot of rotations for extended periods of time. And he's started, I think, probably about a dozen games for the Mavericks this year. I mean, Luka's made him look really good. So,
and serviceable, definitely.
Yeah, over the past 3-5 years, we have this track record of Luka taking solid contributing role players and elevating them up a level or two. And you see it with somebody like, you know, even a Dorian Finney-Smith or Spencer Dinwiddie. So I think we have the right idea with just focusing on putting the right rim pieces around him and then giving him the right partner. And I think Kyrie might be that fit. So now it's just about finding the right role players and more specifically finding the right coaching for that team.
Oh, do you think Luka will be a Maverick in 5 years?
Luka's gonna retire a Maverick. You don't? I do. Just because I feel like it's a branding purposes. I'm thinking as far as the branding. When you look at the Mavericks and you think about them, thinking about one player, and that's Dirk Nowitzki. Luka is the heir apparent to that. If Luka jumps ship and goes to a team, it'll have to be a bigger brand than the Mavericks, which only gives us about 5 teams, Warriors, Lakers, maybe Celtics, maybe Miami Heat. And I just don't see those things happening. Obviously, the Lakers are always in play just because of the big brand, but Luka, is the face of the Mavericks. He's going to run Texas for the next 10, 20 years, man. He's not going anywhere. You got one of the best. He's not owner of the team anymore, but I mean, he's in control of it. And Mark Cuban, they get Kyrie Irving. You push back on Jason Kidd, but I still feel like Jason Kidd is still he's a coach that has a lot of bravado, a lot of influence on the team and the organization. And he's a champion. You want somebody like Luka to learn from him as opposed to somebody like Frank Vogel. So I think that's actually, I mean, maybe. He's won with the Mavericks with Dirk. I mean, maybe he might need to upgrade his assistants for as far as the teaching, but I think that it's very important to have coaches that have really real game experience, real championship level experience, because that's just something to do like Darvin Ham. It's not going to be able to translate to a LeBron James or Anthony Davis.
So O made some great points there, especially about kind of the continuity, right? Coming in after Dirk and kind of carrying that torch. And I am so glad that they got to overlap a little bit so that he was able to kind of see the end of Dirk's career, see the way that he was treated in Dallas, and also get to learn from Dirk, you know, day in, day out.
No, that's that's a special footnote in his career. It's like, damn, you'll forget that at the end of his career.
So I think, you know, we can keep Luka for his whole career, but we've got to really put a priority on keeping him happy and making sure he feels like he's treated right. And I don't know, you know, how much of the games you guys watch, but one thing that happens a lot that really drives Dallas fans crazy is Luka does a lot of complaining and talking to the refs. And, you know, I get it in certain instances, but I do also think at a certain point, it's kind of the coach's job to stand up for his players and make sure that, you know, his players feel like they've got somebody in their corner backing them up. And that is not Jason Kidd. So I think we're on the right track having a player's coach. And I do think we need to solicit Luka's feedback and input into, you know, whoever we get for our next coach. But Jason Kidd is, you know, he's a bystander in these games, and it's really frustrating to watch.
Now, can I ask another question, D? Sorry to take over. Which coach in the NBA is actually making a positive influence on a top-notch team? I'm not talking about the Orlando Magic. Not talking about maybe the OKC Thunder. But you're looking at these veteran teams like Steve Kerr and the Warriors, like which coach is really pushing buttons, and what buttons are they really pushing in order to get the most out of their players?
That's a great question.
That is, bro.
Daryl, you go ahead first.
I think Kerr coaches. I think Clifford coaches. I think Rick Carlisle coaches. I said Clifford. Why did I say that? I meant
Steve Clifford.
No. Denver.
Mike Malone. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
didn't mean to lump my. Never mind.
So I think that's a great start to a list, right? And I think a lot of it also has to do with fit and timing of the team. So I think it's hard if you bring in a team that's already established and you give them a new coach, or if you bring in a coach that's already established and you give them a new team. I look at like Nick Nurse in Toronto, and I think, man, that lined up perfectly for the span of the time he was there, right? Or I look at a guy like Jamal Mosley in Orlando, where their kind of ascent as a team and him as a coach seems to be matching up perfectly. And that one hurts, especially because he was the lead assistant in Dallas, and we went out and got Kidd instead of hiring him.
Promoting him, yeah. That is a good question, though, because a lot of this stuff comes down to it. Like, you look at Missoula and Boston, and it's kind of like you're saying, that's kind of where the question comes from. It's, okay, what is being asked of coaches with, you know, great rosters or great players, right, or vice versa? And you look at that Eastern Conference Finals last year, and there's just no way they should have went down 0-3. You know, it's tough to – you can't really put the blame on any single person. Tatum had an ankle, who knows what. But it's like, yeah, something's got to – that coaching element is what elevates – that's what turns the Lakers-Nuggets series that was competitive every single game into a sweep. Essentially,
yeah for real. In that Lakers and Nuggets series, I think the coaching and the influence, it was miles, man, because I feel like coaching really, you know, it's really put on display in the playoffs. Like regular season, it's not really too much that a coach can really do from game to game, You know, that's my thing. You're not going to make adjustments against the Milwaukee Bucks if you're the Dallas Mavericks. We're going to see those dudes in June. You know what I mean? We're going to focus on the next game, the Kings or something like that. But yeah, coaching it's an important element, man. It's something that we can't necessarily just gloss over, and I feel like that separates the good from the great.
So Chuck, you saw Luka and Jokic, chummying it up at All-Star break. You're not a little worried? Oh, wait, actually, yeah, I don't think you got the answer, because I want to say you were 50-50. How do you feel about Luka in 5 years?
I do think it's 50-50. I mean, I don't, who are we going to bring in? Who are we going to not bring in?
I will say, I like what you said, though. If you're thinking legacy, if you do go somewhere else, you have to win a championship. Absolutely. Because look at what Kevin Durant did. Now you'll look back and, hey, hate it or love it, he had a statement. He made a statement with that move. But if you didn't, then all the slander that he got would be times 10 too. So, yeah.
I do think if he left, it'd be somewhere like a New York or Chicago. I don't think like an LA or like a Miami necessarily holds a ton of appeal to him.
You don't see him and Jokic forming the European Brothers of Destruction?
I mean, they could in Denver.
Right.
Sure. Is Jokic going to stay in Denver forever?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I think he is. I think
why not?
Yeah, he's going to be the best player in franchise history. He's probably already the best player in franchise history. That means something. You don't want to be Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant showed us what not to do. Kevin Durant is a man without a home, a man without a country. He has no team that's going to look at him and be like, man, we love you no matter what. He left OKC. They didn't win anything there. The Warriors, come on now. That's Curry's team. The Nets, nothing got accomplished. And the Suns, I mean, it just seems like a mercenary for hire. And also to go back on the Luka situation, I think that in order for Luka to go to leave the Mavericks, it has to be an A1 top-notch brand. So New York, Chicago is interesting, but I don't really see the list. I don't see the list having much more teams than that, if I'm being quite honest with you, which is why I think he'll end up staying ultimately.
We'll see. And again, I've been in Dallas almost my whole life. So like I don't think of Dallas as like a big national brand or anything like that, right? But I guess, yeah, no, I mean, you're right. No tax income, right? It's nice. And we will be able to pay him the most money, right? And there's no way he's not getting the max, super max every time he's eligible. So it'll be interesting to see.
That was a good bit. That was a good bit on Dallas. I think, we'll revisit this, of course, before the season ends at some point on the pod. But good to hear from our Dallas correspondent how things are going at home. It seems like the roof isn't on fire. The house isn't on fire, but where you're standing on like the front porch, like you're assessing, surveying the
street. It's like a general sense of confusion.
Can I ask a question?
I didn't get to respond. Go ahead, Al.
If you want to go, but
no, I cherry on top of what you were saying, Shiv and I, we were talking about the Mavs in the last episode. That was the thing. He was like, if I have to push back some, the complaining is going to cost them. And I was like, okay, is that really a thing? And I kind of paid attention. I paid attention to it like specifically for like the next week or so. And in close games, when you're not next play mentality and it's 4-on-5, there goes the shot that forces the timeout. There goes the foul because you're putting your teammates at a bad, in the bad spot. So I just wanted to say that. The fact that you said that too, I was like, nah, there is some there's definitely smoke to that fire. I'll let you go.
Yeah, I do see a lot of complaining with the Mavs, but I also see a lot of complaining coming from LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant. all superstars complain. Kobe Bryant was the number one complainer. That's my favorite player of all time. It's just what happens. It comes to the territory. If you went 35, 10, and 10, you got to deal with two possessions where he's just arguing a ref, chewing a ref the ear off.
I mean, for sure, but when he's 50 feet away from the basket talking to the ref and this man gets a wide-open layup, that's frustrating.
It is frustrating, I know, but we also don't complain when he has 40 points and he wills the team to victory.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just having my experience with Kobe, because I used to grill Kobe like, dude, you arguing with the ref, play's over. You got timeouts and media timeouts for that. Why do we need to argue with the ref right here and now? You can't change the call. So But like you said, maybe that's the area where Kidd needs to jump in. But you can't, you know, that comes with the superstarness, man. That comes with the 35, 40 points per game.
But somebody has to take that stance on the team, though. It's like certain elements are needed in a championship team. You need somebody who's going to be tough. You need somebody who's going to get a technical, who's not going to have, you know, their point guard getting thrown around. You need somebody who's going, hey, hold the refs accountable. Hey, MF-er, you see this. Like, blow that whistle.
We need a Ron Artest, not a metal world piece, like a Ron Artest specifically. And I just don't see it on the roster right now. And that's what kind of worries me.
I was going to ask, who's the vet? If I'm not mistaken, you guys don't have a Haslam. You guys don't have an OG there.
Man, the sad thing is, it's Dwight Powell.
That's the vet?
Yes.
This is why you keep Boban.
I mean, and Dwight's like well-respected within the NBA. No disrespect to Dwight at all, but like, you know.
Moving on. I'm gonna make you sit on the stand for that.
That's gonna be a long pause. I didn't have anywhere to go.
Is that camera on me? All right, Lake Show. So y'all sorry, I was telling y'all, but I got to go see the boys. Got to go see the boys play, and it's like, what's annoying about this team is that it's really like Terrell asked me on the pod. He was like, the Lakers have never left your top four in terms of like finals contenders, like your top five for the whole season, have they? I'm like, no. Because we will get there to the postseason. I know we're at 10, I know, but hey, I'm speaking into existence. We'll get there. And then at that point, I'm going to like our odds having LeBron James and Anthony Davis and a above average cast of role players to make it out of that series every time. Like, I'm going to like the odds. I know we have a Jokic problem. If we cross paths, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But it's like with the Lakers, it's not a matter of can they beat the best teams. It's just like, are y'all going to play like a team that wants to win on any given night? Or are we going to like look at each other? And you know what I mean? Oh, I'll let you go.
Ah, man, you said so much there. And so much questions that us Laker fans actually have on a daily basis. But we got to just look at the reality and look at the facts. The Lakers are a well-constructed team, but they're not a team built to beat the best team in the league. And that the best team in the league happens to play in the conference. They're no match for the Nuggets. Let's just face it there. But I think that the main thing that's plaguing the Lakers, it has to be locker room issues. When I'm hearing Anthony Davis, you know, say a little questionable, suspect things about Darvin Ham's coaching, I raise an eyebrow. When I hear Darvin Ham in the press conference basically calling out the players, I raise two eyebrows. And when I go out and I see the Lakers mail it in after every halftime speech or after every quarter, I'm like, man, what the HE double hockey stick is going on in that locker room during halftime? Why are we coming out stagnant? Why are we not?
Where's the passion? Where's the, you know what I'm saying? I know we got older guys that aren't necessarily diving on the floor, all this and that right now, but it's like the tone isn't being set consistently enough on the court. And that has to start somewhere.
And where does that start? Because is it going to start with LeBron, start with Ham, start with AD? Where does it start?
So yeah, man, I'm on board with you. I don't think Ham is necessarily the guy for the job because I can't tell you what he does for the team.
And we were just having this conversation about the Mavericks, like, and about how some top-notch teams with veteran leadership, the coach is just there to manage minutes. I don't really know what he's doing besides maybe pregame game plans, but his in-game adjustments haven't been good because the whole Nuggets series, I call it a close sweep. Like, no game was a blowout. But those are games that's won by coaching. Make an adjustment here. Do a little this there. Do a little that there. Make a shot here. Get it, you know, force a turnover there. Those are the type of things that, you know, you need the coach to put you in the right position to win.
So,
Shaquille?
I need to be completely transparent. I don't watch enough Lakers basketball to dissect the specific issues with the coaching or the team chemistry or anything like that. My questions and my issues are all like front office based. specifically, what the hell is this front office doing? Like, I'm looking at, like, and I want to know what you guys think. I guess, like, the goal or the game plan or the objective is here. Like, I'm looking at the roster, right? We've got very old LeBron James, pushing 40, still, you know, one of the best players of all time, but he's getting older. We got Anthony Davis, excuse me, over 30, made out of glass. Not somebody I think you can really depend on to play an entire postseason, let alone game in, game out. Aside from that, you got Austin Reeves, who's serviceable. You got Jared Vanderbilt, who I like. You got D'Angelo Russell, who's talented, but seems to catch like every stray bullet from every Lakers fan ever. And then the rest of the team is like respectfully washed. Like you got Harry Giles, Rui Hachimura, Jackson Hayes, those three guys. Like
Harry Giles hasn't touched the court. I didn't know he was on the roster.
Good. They're these are guys that are like all potential. How long are you able to like trade off your potential before you no longer have potential? You've got like Spencer Dinwiddie and Christian Wood. Would love to stack up their stats on the Lakers compared to when they were playing next to Luka. You got Cam Reddish, another guy that's a lot of potential, but is ever going to lead to anything? And that's where I'm at with this team, I guess, is for the last couple of years, it's felt like there's a lot of potential, but is ever going to lead to anything? And what is the front office doing to kind of make that happen?
I don't know, man. In terms of direction, it's clearly we have to win now. That's why you're seeing moves that may not make a ton of sense. Because, all right, we need to get bodies. We need to have injury, you know, backups and B options. But at the same time, you know, we've got a player that's got this much window left to get it done. So we got to try and squeeze it while we can. It'd be a disservice not to. And then everybody else who's just not really cut out for it weeds itself out. Like, I think D'Angelo Russell put the fire on his ass with the trade deadline. He responded, and he opened up and vented a lot about a lot of those issues could have been directly caused by Darvin Ham as well, or the coaching staff. So
let me rephrase my question. As Laker fans, when was the last time you two were like, the Lakers have made a move and you were like, man, this front office gets it. This absolutely helps us win a title this year.
I wasn't opposed to a lot of moves that were made last year at the deadline. Yeah. So last year at the deadline, we brought in, I don't have it all super duper top, but we brought in Rui, brought in Vando.
Okay.
Brought in
Malik Beasley.
Yeah, at the deadline last year. Over the summer, you know, also added Cam, added TP, added Jackson, which I'm like, all right, look, we've accumulated a lot of guys who are 6'8", 6'9", have some range. Is this formula going to get it done? It's like you're trying to mirror the bubble, but I'm not seeing the real fives that we had in the bubble. And that was effective. Oh.
Yeah, Chuck, just to answer your question, the Lakers are trying to balance winning with running a successful business. Their main priority is running a successful business. And if they happen to win, they'll like that. They don't care about winning a championship. We have 42 home games. We need 42 sellouts. If we get LeBron in the playoffs, it's all a bonus. And I think that's their main thing. Now, when it comes to roster construction, it's hard to compare the Lakers roster to other players, I mean other teams' rosters, because the way LeBron plays, it's unique. He's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to need another big. He's going to need another defender, and he's going to need shooters. Now, it's only about five players in the league that can do that. They already have one in AD, who's a versatile big. You got your shooter slash ball mac slash ball handler slash playmaker in D'Angelo Russell. I think what they need to get better at maybe between the margins. Like I like an Austin Reeves, but he's not going to get you over the hump, you know. And when it comes to role players such as Vanderbilt and Rui, you got to swing high on these quote unquote potential players because the Lakers don't prioritize the draft.
I hear you guys on all of this. I guess here's kind of like, I guess some of my pushback on the running successful business part, though. You guys are the biggest brand in the NBA, like globally. I mean, you're bigger than the Celtics and the Knicks within the U.S., and you're probably second to only the Warriors internationally.
And they're still cheap. The Warriors are still
but,
cheap.
Okay. But you've got that brand, and you've got LeBron James, right? So you've got the fans, and you've got, like the merchandise is going to sell. The tickets are going to sell. That part almost takes care of itself in this current iteration, I feel like. But, and I hear you guys on not having the draft capital because, you know, the Mavericks have been in a similar boat since the awful Kristaps Porzingis trade. Would you guys rather have LeBron James with the current Lakers supporting cast, or would you rather have LeBron James with the Mavericks roster minus Luka?
No, I like our roster, bro. I must say, I do.
Okay.
D'Lo, for one, I think he wants to be a Laker. He was drafted by the Lakers. He played with Kobe. I don't think D'Lo has ever lacked confidence. When it, like, this is where me and O kind of like bridge the gap in terms of this conversation, because y'all know I'm a lifelong LeBron fan. O's day one never switched sides with the Lakers. We've come together. We're in the same household now.
Right.
Bron needs, he like is a 2K player. He will experiment with pieces all season long. And so it's like, you know what? I like playing with him. I trust him. That's our guy. Like this, it kind of plays itself into shape all season long. And people earn, like, you know, trust is earned amongst teammates and teams that make a deep run. You look at that postseason run last year, and every win, D'Lo was a factor. And when we didn't kind of prioritize his involvement, statistically, this is on record that that's how games went down. I'm curious to hear what you think of AD's season so far, because no matter what, man, he's never going to shed the bad rap that he gets. My guy has been there. He's missed a handful of games. I know you don't see the takeover. You don't see the Shaq. You don't see the just get out of his way. He's the best player on the court night in and night out. But
he looks like Bambi.
Numbers don't. The numbers definitely don't. He's second or third in the league in double-doubles. He's missed, I can count on one hand, how many games? Literally. And I want to fact-check that as we have this conversation, but I don't think that he has the reinforcement for him to really jump off the screen. Because we look at the bubble team. You had other guys who could rebound. This team has him and LeBron, and LeBron's not trying to bang. So if he can't rebound, he can't run the floor. If he can't offensive rebound, if he has to worry about getting back on defense and trying to box out, then you're doing neither one. And you're not, you know, back in time to get back and protect the paint. And you can't be a force on the offensive glass. Yet nonetheless, he's averaging 25 and 12 or 13 and two blocks and a steal. So it's like, we can't ask much more for him without some reinforcement for him to have freedom. But, how do you think he's played?
Statistically, AD has played at optimal level. AD has played at an MVP-like level statistically. I'm not mad at his production. I'm happy he's been able to tough it out and actually suit up for these games. Now, here's my problem with AD. Too soft. Too soft. I want to watch my language on here, so I won't go into how I really feel. But it's too soft. And in any circumstance, if a dude has beat you 9 straight times, it's public, it's public, it's out there. That 10th time, you better win or die trying. AD, as under any circumstance, you cannot get elbowed by Sabonis and you crying and whining all over the floor, and Sabonis is down there celebrating with his teammates. That's soft. And I think that sets the tone for the Lakers, because if I see my biggest, baddest, best player rolling down the floor, crying, bitching and complaining, how does that make me feel as a 6'3 guard? You know what I mean? And it's supposed to be our backbone, our toughness. And I feel like that's the biggest problem with AD. And I feel like that's why AD can't get over, can't break that glass ceiling. He's going to be forever known as very good, but he ain't great. And that's just the simpleness about it. Now, as far as him running the floor, when he plays, he jumps off the floor to me. Like, he's the best big to me in the league as far as outside of Jokic, obviously. But as far as defense, you know, little offense, I would like to see him actually catch the ball on the block more. But it's the small things. It's the complaining to the refs. It's the, we have 4 possessions in a row and they're shooting jumpers, call for the ball, get mean. Those are the things I like to see out of my bigs. But I did want to just clarify something really quickly before I pass the mic. the Lakers have a better roster to me than the Dallas Mavericks. If you swap Luka and LeBron, the Lakers roster would be amazing. I feel like the Lakers role players and complementary players are actually really good. I mean, I don't think the Mavericks have a D'Angelo Russell. I mean, what would you compare him to? It's Tim Hardaway Jr. But I feel like they're really a deep team. They can really go nine deep. Dudes like Jackson Hayes might not jump off the table, but if you play him right, Darvin Ham alongside an AD, or maybe get him some little spot minutes, just he'd be out there by himself. I think that we make for a hell of a team to be reckoned with. Now, I would like to see them all put it together, but circling back, man, it started with AD. He got to be tough. All that soft stuff and crying and complaining about fouls and getting poked in the eye. Bro, it's NBA basketball, man. We get it's harder fouls at LA Fitness than that, and we don't get no check for it. Let's go.
Yeah. No, I think that they need to unlock him a little more is how I'm going on it. Like,
how? I agree with you. And also,
I think it's – so how many lobs does Jackson Hayes have to catch? Like, how many posters does he have to get during this season in a random quarter to where it's like, yo, give my guy 25 minutes a game. He is springy. Right. He will let AD roam. Park his ass down there. AD can do what he has to do to kind of get busy. I'm interjecting here because I wanted to specify this. It's a geometry equation. If you're giving more minutes to a Jackson Hayes, the defense has to commit a rim protector to him to rebound, guard pick and rolls, guard the paint. That means that you are now putting a secondary big defender on Anthony Davis. If you do decide to swap that, guess what? There's a mismatch somewhere. And then guess what? A third defender has to be allocated for LeBron, who's also big, or else guess what? He's getting bullied, or LeBron's going to play chess and pick it apart with AD. In my opinion, that's how you unlock him. You're making it too easy for defenses. Now, as I was saying, I just kind of had to pull some stuff up. Dude, he's all over the place. He's sixth in win shares. He's fifth in defensive win shares. He's fifth in minutes played, period. Like, bro's giving us what he has right now. I think that if you look beyond AD, it's been a rotating cast right now of Wood, of Vanderbilt, and the guys that are smaller than him, like Hachimura, Bron, TP, things like that. We need another anchor alongside him because he's voiced not wanting to play the five. He's shut up and played the five so far this season. If we can sort of acquiesce and lean into that, accommodate him a little more, get him some support, I think it'll be tremendous in the long run.
Yeah, man. I think that, like you said, AD is playing at an MVP level. And I think the main thing that we need from him, like I said, just toughness. That's my only thing. But as far as statistically, getting more juice out of him, we're getting enough out of him. But how can we?
We need something else. I think that, yeah, man. Okay, I don't know. That's my take.
How can we, as a Lakers team, based upon our current roster construction, put another big next to AD, have LeBron on the floor, and still have shooting? And that might come back to what Chuck was saying about roster construction, but I just don't see a lineup with our current players that'll have a big LeBron, AD, and shooting on the floor.
It would have to be D'Lo. Okay. And then it has to be D'Lo, Bron, AD.
D'Lo, Bron, AD.
D'Lo, Bron, AD. I would like to go one more. I think we should be starting Jackson Hayes.
Okay.
Start Hayes, energy. Don't get AD in foul trouble. And then we can start whoever else you want it to be. It could be Reeves. It could be Rui. It could be, man, we never even got to see Gabe Vincent. And I'm not trying to make him seem like the savior. I'm not. He played some crunch time games for Miami Heat last year. We haven't even got to see what he would look like as a defender, 3-and-D guard on this team. So, unfortunately, we won't. We also just missed, like, a mother effort in the draft.
Well, historically speaking, it'd be about 50% of how good he was at doing it for the Heat.
Which was what? Because, I mean, we've seen him for three games. He averaged 5 points, and I wasn't impressed. That was a signing.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Gabe Vincent.
You went off on your little Gabe Vincent tangent. You're like, we don't know how good he is.
He ain't that good.
No, I'm just saying, like, in terms of that fifth spot, you can throw cards at that fourth or fifth, like, a lot. I don't think that there's a head and shoulders best five lineup. If you asked me, it would be Reeves, D'Lo, Bron, AD. Start Jackson, might close with Rui.
I feel like the Lakers did, they unlocked it when they would do what they did with JaVale McGee. McGee only played 7 minutes beginning the first each half.
Bro, it was money, man. It was money, dude. And it was we're irritant. If AD has to worry about guarding Jokic all game, if he's got to worry about guarding, you know, the rim against the league's best all game and trying to do the other one, it's not going to happen. And whether that's a mental thing that he's missing or it's just, hey, that's where the rubber meets the road, we will fall short if that's the case, if we can't alleviate some of what he's, you know, carrying. LeBron, it's all additive, man. Like, I'm not asking him to go get 30. I'm not trying to ask him to go get 25. Just go out there and be a good player, Bron, and, like, play for these other guys.
If you're AD, then, but, like, what's the point? You're supposed to be the guy, and part of being the guy is guarding their guy. Like, he's not making all this money to guard Aaron Gordon. Come on, you kidding me? What are you doing?
I beg the question of who's doing that, then, in the league.
Who's guarding Aaron Gordon? Anybody?
No. Not who's guarding Aaron Gordon. I'm saying as a big or just best player, period. Who is showing you night in and night out, I am stepping up to the plate, taking the best defensive assignment. And
Paul George, SGA, Kawhi Leonard.
But I'm also responsible for the team. Like, I'm carrying the team offensively as well. Like, that is happening.
Paul George, SGA, Kawhi Leonard.
No, they are in LA. They're definitely, hey, we can pass off. We have guys that are comfortable. We're comfortable leaning on each other. SGA, sure. He's not saying I'm going to hold so-and-so. If anything, he's making sure he gets his 30. Like, that's a fact. Giannis will take an assignment in the fourth quarter, maybe. But they are going to divide that best matchup along the front court. Okay, Embiid won't play in Denver. Like,
that's whack.
Who's running to the hardest assignments across the league, offensively and defensively, as the star? This isn't a diss to players because we have an incredible depth of just star players right now. But there's not a lot of people that are still doing that.
I think there's a difference between actively taking on the assignment, whether it's guarding the best player versus what we're talking about with Anthony Davis, which is actively ducking the assignment when it's the best player.
And yeah, I don't think he's ducking, though.
I don't think he's ducking. What I do think that is, I don't think he's stepping up to the plate. Dude, if someone is like Jokic is dominating your team and has won 8 straight games, you're the best player, your only chance, you have to take that matchup. If you're not getting 25 tonight and you get 15 and 15, but Jokic not getting 30 and he has 20, 12, and 12, that's a win. You got to sacrifice stats for that. The reason why dudes don't guard the best players because they got to get 25 and 10 a night. And they don't want to sacrifice that because that equals dollars and cents. Somebody like AD is thinking about dollars and cents, in my opinion, at least. Because if you really were thinking
definitely
about
in a regular season, and that's why we timing. This temperature check is needed because it's going to be go time, for real, in a couple of months. And not even that, like 6 weeks.
Can I ask a question? Right now, if the Lakers and the Kings matched up in a play-in, what team do you think is going to win?
One gamer.
Over the Lakers.
It's not going to be the Lakers. It's not. And I'm a Laker fan. And the reason won't be the Lakers because the Kings have 10 out of 10 confidence, and AD will not step up to the plate and stop Sabonis. And that's the Kings playmaker. He's a point center for them, theoretically.
He's been incredible this season.
For the Nuggets, Jokic is point center. AD won't step up and stop them. And it has to be AD, unfortunately. The team is not constructed for it to be anyone else.
I think we can get him out of there. We can get him out of there.
What makes you believe that when they whooped our ass 4 times in a row this season?
They can have it. They can have it. They can have it. I think at that point, that is when I do look at a LeBron like, hey, Bron, how are we going out like that? And I'm going to feel some type of way after the fact. But I'm not scared. I'm not scared still. Like, it presents problems. But I just think that this team does have what it takes on the team. It's whether or not they decide to be a team. And we will live and die with that at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I hate that for the Lakers, the excuses are already built in. LeBron's 40. AD is always hurt. We're not built to win. We got bad coaching. I would just like for him to put the excuses to aside.
Right,
it's a business, man.
But to that point, our most recent sample sizes last season
they did that. They showed up, and then they just got outplayed. Bron also had the foot ankle. He wasn't, you know, 100%. None of these guys will beat. But
excuse,
we lost to the right. We got beat by the best team.
Yeah,
but they didn't get smoked in the play-in. They didn't power out in round one or round two. So it's like, that's our most recent sample size still. Those guys are back.
And that's the thing. Those guys were coming into the Lakers trying to prove themselves. Now you already been here for a year. You got a little money. You probably got paid. It's not the same level of motivation. I know we got to move on in, but I me personally, I like the Lakers. I think that we'll be able to make it out the play-in, but I don't want to see the Kings. I'd much rather see Chuck's Mavs first round. We go to Dallas, too, if you want to do that. Tango in Dallas. I like that.
That's why I haven't done this, Chuck, because it's sort of a circular argument until we get to that point. So I wanted to vent alongside somebody about the Lakers because it's necessary.
I think we win that game.
By
several points.
No.
Yeah.
The thing
it might happen. We might be speaking into existence.
I hope it happens. Give us a reason to have a watch party or something like that, like a live tape, and that'd be pretty dope. But I would say, bro, the reason the Lakers could beat the Mavericks, you guys are so light in the inside, man. I'm not scared of Gafford, Derek Lively. You know, I'm not really scared of those guys.
Y'all are light on the inside too, though. So that's not like a big advantage.
But our light are better players, though. I mean, if you call LeBron James 260 light, sure. But if you call an AD 7-footer with all the skill in the world light, the only light person we got is Hayes. And he's going to be in there for 10 minutes, running up and down the court, getting whoever's gas.
AD just doesn't scare me. And like the only scary thing for me is LeBron. And then if D'Lo hits like 10 threes, that's the only thing that I'm worried about because we've got Luka. LeBron's one of the best players of all time.
Sure.
No doubt. Luka Doncic is a better basketball player right now today. And in addition to that, we've got Kyrie Irving, who is the most skilled person to ever dribble a basketball.
Wow.
If Tim Hardaway Jr. wakes up that day and decides to make jump shots, it's over.
Luka might freeze him out, though. Ball hog Luka might he might not get his guys involved. I'm messing. I'm throwing shade.
He might complain too much, you know? We might get an extra layup down the court. That might be the game. Right.
That's a real concern. That's a real concern for me.
Last thing I'll get off about AD before we get off of here, just because I didn't say it. When we look back, man, generationally speaking, Embiid's had a nice run. Hasn't been punctuated with a championship. Jokic, of course. Giannis. Up to you what position you want to slot him at, but he's in the big man conversation. AD will stand the test of time when we look back of like being an heir apparent to guys like, not saying he's them, but traditional bigs like a Duncan, like a KG. They don't make that many guys anymore that step up to the plate and are perennial all-stars like that. So I'm just saying, I got to throw my guys credit, man. And come postseason, no rebounds, no rings.
Agreed.
It's March, Chuck. What's going on, man?
Ooh. Well, we won't know for another, I guess, 5 or 6 hours, but
I know, right? Ah, man, we are catching this right before the bracket is revealed.
Yeah. So it's hard. I mean, a lot of it's going to be matchup dependent, right? You don't really know who has a good matchup, who has a bad matchup until you see the seeding. The fourth one seed is kind of an interesting theme to watch or to monitor, right? Like UConn, Purdue, and Houston seem to have three of them locked up. And then that fourth one's probably going to be either North Carolina, Iowa State.
You think the conference tourney loss knocked Arizona? Was Arizona not in the conversation for that?
No, Arizona and Tennessee are the other two. So here's the thing. North Carolina, Tennessee, and Arizona all lost in their conference championships to teams that they should have beaten. And Iowa State beat the daylight out of Houston. So I don't know now if Iowa State's going to be in consideration for that fourth one seed. But the only reason that matters is because nobody wants to be in the same bracket as UConn. UConn seems to pretty clearly be the best team in college basketball this year.
Yeah, UConn is smoking. I'm very mad also when we start talking to, or when we think, when you think about Iowa State, because y'all know I was running Rebel Manager a couple years. Second year was under Coach Otzelberger. He never really got his, he only did, I think, two full seasons there. Keyshawn Gilbert came second season. He was a, you know, red shirt, transfer portal player, whatever. And we showed promise that year. Long, it's a cycle that's happened at UNLV. We went through like five coaches in 7 years or so up until this past year. You see him dip to Iowa State with Keyshawn Gilbert. And I'm like, really? Really, y'all want to be top five in the country right now? Really? Okie dokie. So, nah, I just, it's super, super tangent, super side note. It's getting fun right now, man. It's getting fun. UConn does look head and shoulders above everybody. These games are sort of like, you know, a nonstop heat check. Like,
well, you know, and there are some teams that aren't necessarily competing for that one line that we just mentioned that I think could get really hot and be really dangerous throughout the tournament. I mean, you look at a team like Auburn that goes 10 or 12 players deep and plays with a lot of pace.
They have some guys that can fly.
Yeah. I think Baylor's really dangerous this year.
Still, no doubt. We don't have much coming out of the Pac-12 this year outside that I think is going to do something.
Arizona and Kentucky are both really interesting to me because they both have really high ceilings and score a lot. But they can beat anyone and they can lose to anyone. That's how I feel about both teams.
Now, Zona with Caleb Love looks like he was a difference maker because he brought some of that tournament pedigree and college collegiate success to a team that's traditionally blown it went out sad in the tournament. And then you just, when I'm literally going over all these games with my brother day in, day out this past week, I'm like, nah, bro, Arizona's different right now with this guy Love. He came from UNC last year. What happens the next game? I try to tell, I'm like banging this point to him. He like gets 5 points against Oregon.
Yeah.
And they get smoked against Oregon. And he's like looking at me like, really? I'm like, dog, what can I say? It's what they do.
Go ahead, O.
I would say that's going to be the Caleb Love experience. Like, you look up. No, he had three straight 20-point games. Big game coming up. You know, he gets out, goes 8, 3 for 11 from the field or something like that. Now, I would ask a simple question for someone who's a more so casual college basketball person. Like, which player should I be looking at as somebody who could potentially, like, go to the next level? When you're talking about UConn as the best team, like, who's their best player? Who's their guy that you think has NBA potential?
It's tough with UConn because the guys that have the most NBA potential probably aren't their best players right now. So they've got a freshman named Stephon Castle, who's going to be a lottery pick in this draft in all likelihood. But I'd say their two best players right now are Tristan Newton, their guard, and Cam Spencer, who's a transfer in this year.
Got it.
Not to mention, like, your stalwarts, like, Donovan Klingon. Like, you know, you've got, like, how Zach Edey is a player of the year contender, all, you know, for Purdue and stuff. Like, they've got their version of him as well, but we're not thinking that these guys are, like, lottery bound by any means.
Correct.
Got it.
But in terms of guys that could kind of take over and steal March Madness a little bit, Kentucky's got two, Rob Dillingham and Reed Sheppard. And both of those guys will be high draft picks in all likelihood.
Yeah, I like Rob.
Rob's nice. Yeah. Tennessee has Dalton Knecht, who is probably the most explosive scorer in the country. North Carolina's got RJ Davis, who's probably a contender for that title as well.
Carolina's got a couple bodies.
A couple bodies
that are look, they got some potential.
Yeah, I was watching the game. They played the ACC tournament, and I thought they looked really good, to be honest with you, especially RJ Davis. I see him hit a couple shots. I'm like, okay, they got a dude. When I look at these teams in the tournament, like traditionally, I feel like you got to have a dude. At the end of the day, you got to have one guy who's just like a little better than everybody else. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but when I'm thinking back, like even teams like Texas Tech had Jared Culver, who was just a little better than everybody else at the time, and they got all the way to the Final Four.
You're totally right, and that's why it's interesting to look at a team like Dayton coming out of the A-10. Because even though they're, you know, a mid-conference, smaller school, they've got a guy named Jerron Holmes who is basically a walking 2010, and he's a really good athlete. So he's somebody that could give even, you know, Power Five conference teams trouble in the tournament if they match up.
Nice.
Yeah, man, the tournament's so funky just because there's a lot going on, especially when you're trying to, like, parlay it into how does it roll over to the league. Like, for example, last year, I'm looking at a guy like Trayce Jackson-Davis who has, like, the whole bag on the block. And I'm like, I get it. He's older than most of the draft class coming out. This guy knows how to play basketball, though. Like, I would be interested in, you know, seeing more out of this guy at the next level. Chuck, have you seen this guy for Wisconsin, Store?
Yeah, AJ Store.
Does he not remind you of Anthony Edwards? He also looks like him.
Really? He does look like him.
I think he's actively wearing, like, the undershirt with the calf sleeve or, like, with the wrist tape or something like that, too, to even look like him some more. For some reason, he jumped off screen to me a little bit, and I'm like, I think that guy's –
He's explosive.
He's got something in the bag.
Yeah.
Do you guys weigh in, like, you know, traditionally how programs that produce pros, like, into your evaluation of how they are? So when I think of teams, for example, when I think of, like, Wisconsin basketball, I don't really see a lot of pros coming out of there, so I kind of be a little – but when I see a team like Kentucky, I'm like, they produce solid pros. So you can come off the bench at Kentucky, Rob, and still be productive in the league, but you can be Nigel Hayes and start at Wisconsin and not last to a contract.
See, I don't, because you brought up two really interesting examples. That Wisconsin team that was led by Frank Kaminsky beat that Kentucky team that had
That was undefeated.
All of them guys on it, right? So I do look at, like, past success, but I evaluate it differently for, say, like, March Madness than I would for the NBA draft.
Got you. I got you. But I mean, I like college basketball. Like, it's fun. It's interesting. You know what I mean? But I just feel like it needs more star power. And then I would like them to take the baseball model. This is kind of like my little hot take. And you can go straight from high school to the league if you want. But if you go to college, you have a minimum of like 2 years, at least 2 years in college. And then you can go to the league. What are your thoughts on that?
I actually like that a lot. I've talked about trying to implement something similar because I do think there needs to be a little bit more continuity. Only thing I would want to do is make sure that we're not, like, any of these high school kids that want to go pro, that's great, but let's make sure we're not messing anything up for them. So, like, I would want the interest to be reciprocated from the NBA, right? So, like, if you're a high schooler, you want to go to the draft, I would want the NBA to be like, yes, we want you to enter the draft, as opposed to having the NBA be like, nah, you should probably go to college.
Right. I agree. But also, from an NBA team, I'm like, we can draft you, but we're going to send you to the G League for a year or two and it not be looked at as something bad. You know what I mean? I mean, they're trying to do that. I even seen Jordan Hawkins, who I was kind of high on last year at UConn. He spent time in the G. And I'm like, I feel like that's good for his game. But also look at dudes like Amari Bailey. And I'm like, yeah, you came out and you got drafted, but you should be at UCLA right now developing your game. You know what I mean?
So I think it's one thing if you're playing in the G on an NBA contract versus if you're playing in the G on a G League contract. Because if you're going to get drafted just developing the G League and you're on a G League contract, you should go to college, make your money with NIL, and then wait till you're ready to go straight to the league.
Right.
Because at that point, it stops making sense for the players, depending on what kind of contract they're on.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, maybe they can, you know, do something with that, with better contracts, something like that. But I just think that dudes like Amari Bailey, Chuchifino, these younger dudes, I'd like to see them in college basketball because that will make the tournament way better. You know what I mean? We're able to see these dudes for much more longer and actually play high productive, high level basketball.
Well, and I'm a North Carolina fan. So for us to have like RJ and Armando, who are both fourth and fifth year seniors, that's been great for me because I feel like, you know, I've gotten to spend so much time with them and really invest in them as players and people. So it's been great.
Yeah. How old is Armando now? About 28?
I think he's 22 or 23. Okay. And then Cormac Ryan's like 24
and a half.
Yeah. Cormac's like a sixth year senior.
Did I miss the Bronny James talk?
Oh no, nah,
we steered away from that one.
No, I'm messing. Had a potty break. Hey, this guy's dissed the diapers. Salute to Bash.
Hey man, progress.
Did y'all start talking about women's college, the women's tournament yet?
Nah, we no, were just no. Nah, we did. We left it
because off. it sounded like that was the segue of like the reward for the viewer, for the fan of the program, for the product overall of getting these guys returning and familiarity and name value and just, you know, having something to refer to when we're getting ready for this time of the year versus so-and-so is supposed to be going first round. Like, we don't know. But, like, you hear Paul Pierce and KG kind of chop it up about the women's tournament. It was hilarious. He's like, AOP, name five players in the league in college right now. Name me five players. You know, Paul Pierce is like crossfaded on the show. He's like, he's like, that's what I'm talking about, man. Come on, man. You look at the women's side, you got Caitlin. You got Angel Reese. He stops naming folks.
Oh, he's tough.
It's like,
you got JuJu.
It's like, knock it off. But the point stands for sure, because you got JuJu, you got Paige over in UConn.
Cameron Green,
our Lady Rebels are ranked 19th in the country. We're back-to-back-to-back Mountain West Conference champions. Desiree Young, she's a double-double force. She's going to be in the league next year, I'm just saying as well. But no, man, the college, the women's college game has gotten their flowers. That's cool to see. That's definitely cool to see.
Just to jump in real quick, and I think that the women's tournament should be really interesting and full of stars. It's going to be everything the men's tournament isn't, which is parity, which is I think that they're going to have a sprinkle of stars a little bit everywhere. And we get to see youngins start and OGs finish, and the cycle's going to come back, and we're going to have a rematch again next year. For some of these programs. So I'm high on it. I'm looking at players like JuJu. I want to see her go off and probably break a record. I'm looking at LSU, man, versus South Carolina, their little rivalry they got going on. Caitlin Clark.
You know what's interesting too is that this is sort of coming back around to our thing about coaching.
Talk to me.
In the men's game, we've had the retirements of Coach K and Roy Williams and just a couple of folks, but it's like we used to just rattle off the coaches along with their success. And it's kind of like you look at the Tom Izzos now, you look at Rick Pitino now, you look at Coach K right now, and it's like these guys are still around, but they haven't been a force per se, as you know, they haven't lived up to their name in recent years. Whereas in the women's game, you've got Coach Mulkey, you've got Gino Auriemma, you've got Dawn Staley, who are probably the three best coaches in basketball right now.
Stanford coach is all-time women.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. And I don't know. That's just a funny – that's another footnote that's attached to that. It's like something's there. Something's there, and it's not whether it's NIL, whether it's, you know, these guys, you know, you hear Saban, you know, on Capitol Hill kind of airing his grievances about the game. I don't think that he's the perfect person to probably be talking, to be fighting that fight.
He was hating, man. Call it what it is, bro. He was mad. Right. When they, even the playing field, he couldn't dominate. That's what it sounded like to me, if I'm keeping it real with you.
Yeah, more or less, you know. But it's something is there where the essence of the game has shifted a little bit on the men's side, and the women's side, it just kind of hasn't yet. What is most important, or what's most intriguing for me, is seeing if this spotlight that the women's college game has kind of gotten, to see if that can raise the stakes in the W a little more. I'd love to see that. It's a whole different fight. You know, I'll let you go. But Caitlin doing what she's doing to enter the WNBA and make $500K doesn't sound right. I don't know what she's making, what she would make, will make, whatever. And she will make more because she'll have endorsements, she'll have a shoe, the whole nine. But, like, I want to see, and I know we're talking business at that point. Is this front office stuff? This isn't a matter of can the girls play? Definitely not. But I'd like to see it also translate to the W. But
I mean, I would love to see it translate to the W. And now I would love to see the players get paid more. But we got to be fair, man. You get paid based upon what you make. You know what I mean?
Revenue. What are we working with?
Yes. I just looked it up. Kaylin's expected to earn less than $80,000 next year from the W. She has an NIL evaluation of $3.5 million. So she'll be taking a couple million dollar pay cut just to go play in the WNBA. And now I do think that the W will have success based upon the influx of women college athletes we have coming in. But they're going to probably have to tweak their whole schedule. They probably have to change some things. And as far as they got to make the season maybe a little longer, they might have to try to push these stars more. And it's going to take the NBA and WNBA effort, but it won't be overnight. We're going to have to wait at least 3-4 years like these rivalries build up. But I do think that they have OGs still in the game, like Diana Taurasi and Skylar Diggins. And you still got the youngins in the game, like your Sabrina and your Caitlin, who's able to make for some interesting TV. The thing that haunts the W, their best games are when football season is right here. I'm sorry, I'm just not watching WNBA basketball when the Packers are about to play, or week one is preseason. I'm going to see what they got going on over there. If they're able to tweak the schedule and stay closer to summertime and springtime, I think they'll see more success. Sorry, my dog's going crazy.
I would look into relocating some of the franchises.
Expansion's on the radar too, though. That's coming in a couple years.
No, I know expansion, right? Yeah, but like we're talking about, we've got teams in Dallas, teams in LA, teams in New York, and maybe they're not drawing the attendance that they should be. And it's not because it's a bad product, right? The WNBA is a great product. There's a lot to do in those cities. And so maybe it's not as appreciated as it would be in other larger markets, smaller than those huge metropolitan markets, but still, I mean, you could do Des Moines, you could do smaller cities in California, you could do Omaha, Nebraska, you could do places that don't already have existing professional sports teams, but that do have those markets and those fan bases for teams to come in and be well supported and be well received.
No, bro, that's a hell of a point. And it rings true, me being in Vegas. Like, I know exactly where you're coming from. You'll be surprised how many artists won't put Vegas on their tour date, because when you come to Vegas, there's 75 shows every weekend and night.
Yeah.
Don't let there be a game, a Raider game, a Knights game, an Aces game.
For what?
Right. And 5 years ago, though, we were viewed as a medium market at best. No sports franchises 6 years ago. The Aces this past season, first WNBA team ever, they sold out of preseason season tickets. Sold out. First time it's happened in the WNBA. And we've got success to back it up too, but that's case in point. You give these markets that don't have more to hold on to, it'll mean more.
Indeed. I even see the MLS doing that too.
They're out here. MLS is out here.
Yeah. So that's actually a great point, Chuck.
Yeah, like I bet the Fort Wayne Mad Ants games, I bet those are packed. I bet they are live. Or what? Come on, what are we doing?
The Red Claws.
The main Red Claws.
Main Red. Yeah, Crustacean Nation, rise up.
Nah, fellas, I think that was
a good exercise, man. That was what we needed to do. Ground the bases on some basketball.
Man.
In the middle of March.
That was fun. Yeah, I mean, I really can't wait to the tournament when they have bracketology. We can check this back out, maybe make a bracket or something. That'd be pretty dope.
Yeah, man.
Daryl, you should host a bracket group for all your podcast guests.
Just came to me. Yeah, we'll have to do it. We'll have to do it. That along. Chuck, were you in the fantasy league this past year? I don't think so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were.
I beat your ass, but didn't win the championship.
There we go. It's all a blur. It's all a blur. We'll be back next year as well. Don't you forget it.
I think I complained because you wanted to add the bye. And I went back and looked at it. And if we had added the bye, I would have won.
Man, it might have helped me too. It happened.
I was like,
it happened.
Just did all this chirping for no reason. It's all right. We didn't have any money on it.
Yeah, next season, can we raise the stakes?
Yeah,
somebody
man.
Do something embarrassing or something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
I wanted to order the belt. and I didn't have everybody. I didn't want to come out of pocket for the belt. It was, if you don't got the money by game one, you ain't getting the money.
Hey, bro, I came out of pocket for the rag league jerseys, so I don't blame you, man.
Let me see it.
I've seen it, yo. This is a nutty team.
What does it say? Hey, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, the name of the team, there's an admiral, or there's a ship steering wheel on the center logo, and they are the Dribbling Seamen. Till next time, ladies and gentlemen. Like, follow, and subscribe, of course. Hey, it was good to have y'all on here, fellas. For real, for real.
Hey, thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having us, broski.
Dribbling Seamen.
Hey, yo, D, you been watching wrestling?
Stop it, bro. That's I gotta cut the recording because you already know. Rock going stupid right now, bro.
Yeah, man, I heard his little song. I'm like, oh, Rock really back, huh?
You gotta watch his Twitter promos, bro. He's been dropping like long form. He dropped the 8-minute one yesterday, a 20-minute one the week before that. Fire, bro. Fire, bro. Ratings are up.
Yeah.
Business is up. Money's up. You know what I mean? It's big business.
I'm trying to get to before WrestleMania. When's WrestleMania? April, right?
Yep. Less than April 6th or so. We got about 3 weeks.
Yeah, man.
Papi, say it. Peace out.
Yo. Peace out, little dude.
See you, Bash.
Oh, Chuck. Say that's all, folks.
That's all, folks.